One last question. On the proficiency rate, what is the, so if we go back to that proficiency rate slide.
Overall proficiency?
Yeah. What's the definition for overall school's proficiency rate? So is that, does that take all the science tests, the writing tests, the reading tests, the math tests,
every grade level? Currently in the framework, it's looking at math and reading.
Okay.
And separately, not together.
Right, separately.
Which we can currently get for each of our schools within the reporting system. Okay.
And just back to your first question, definitely the measures, an important consideration was that you have continuity within your framework and that the metrics are designed so that unless there are dramatic changes, you will be able to use them consistently even with a change in evaluation assessment.
So it's actually part of the challenge with the ACT-SAT measure and why it looks a little bit more complex, because from year to year, right, performance will change, so.
But Peter, to your statement about we can currently get them by looking at the information that's reported to the state, we'll provide the methodology for doing that, but because it is weighted based on your student enrollment at the various grade levels, your proficiency rates that you get for the state will not be the same as what would be calculated here.
Okay.
Okay.
But your calculation would be a more accurate one because it's not, because it takes the number of kids at each grade level in consideration.
Exactly. Right, because there can be, again, significant differences.
Versus an average of averages or whatever the state
right.
is.
Okay. Right. Okay, this provides an overview of the measures that are included in the alternative academic framework. The full framework is included in the guidance document. Because most of the measures are the same, you know, the process was to start with the framework for traditional schools and then consider what modifications needed to be made and then also take into consideration the feedback that Deanna mentioned from focus groups as well as other communication with stakeholders. So what we've done here is summarized the modifications that were made for the alternative academic framework. So three of the measures in the traditional framework were removed. The adequate growth, the student growth percentiles of the lowest quartile is not in the academic, in the alternative framework. That statewide composite of being able to compare the performance considering the population being served by the charter school is not included here. SAT and ACT are not evaluated for alternative charter schools. But there are two measures that were added to the alternative framework. So in place of that, the first one is in the growth indicator, in place of the growth of the lowest quartile, there's an evaluation of increase in performance level for high school students. And we'll go through each of these in a moment on the next slide. There's also an addition in the post-secondary indicator of academic persistence. So there those two additional measures, which we'll give you detail of in just a moment. And then there were some modifications that were made for the alternative school. So the growth targets, instead of having absolute targets at the 34th, I believe, and the 50th, and you know, comparing that median student growth percentile, the targets for growth for alternative schools are comparative targets to the statewide growth of alternative schools. And again, we'll show you that detail in a moment. Likewise, in the two of the proficiency measures, the targets are based on a comparison instead of to all other schools in the state, it's a comparison to other alternative schools across the state. And then finally, there's a modification made to the graduation rate metrics. So we'll go through, show you detail of those four. So for growth, this is a modified measure from the framework for traditional schools. And you can see that the targets here are comparative. The schools, the alternative schools median student growth percentile is compared to the state median for all alternative schools. And then likewise, the exceeds category is looking at the top 10% of alternative schools in terms of what the value of the median student growth percentile would be at the 90th percentile. And the false bar below is looking at the growth of statewide alternative schools that are in the bottom 20% or below the 20th percentile. There is, again, we're trying to give you a review of this. We can certainly discuss methodology with you, but didn't want to bog you down too much with that, but that will be in the guidance. The other new, one of the new measures added to the alternative framework is this measure, which is increase in performance level. This replaces the growth of the bottom quartile. So this measure for high schools looks at the percentage of non-proficient students that are showing an increase in at least one performance band.
Doesn't measure meets to exceeds. That wouldn't be in this.
It is not.
Did you want to say anything else about this?
This one is something like what they use in the alternative school A through F model. The difference being that in meeting with the alternative schools on this one, we were looking at two testing opportunities, students that were enrolled for the spring test in the prior year and take the fall test in the current year, and what those students who started at Falls Park Below and Approaches Only, and how much, and whether or not they jumped bands, and then looking at students in the fall, so your full academic year in the current year, that were in the fall test, participated in the fall test and participated in the spring test and jumped a band as well. But we did not include the meets to exceeds tests in there. We only started with those that were below the proficiency level.
On the improvement, those percent, so you have 55 for reading and 40% for math. What, not knowing the background there, how'd you come up with the percentiles?
Right. We received actually a run. This was based on a trial run.
Okay.
So we asked the Department of Education to run those for us and tell us what would be the cut point for the number of points that were earned, the percentile for the to be in the 75th percentile. How many points did a school have to earn to be in the 75th percentile, the 50th percentile, and the 25th percentile for reading and math? And that's how those fill out.
Would you think that those change over time? Just a question.
That's a math question.
That certainly is possible, and this could be a set of comparative targets the way other measures within the framework. Yeah.
And if I think back to our growth now, so you compare it to all schools, yet you still use those students that have comparable scores to other students. Don't you really capture the alternatives kids through that process? Although you would capture some of the non-alternative school kids as well. I mean, largely you pick them up just because that's where their scores are.
Right, you certainly could make that argument. I think that the adjustments were there because there's the possibility that there are other factors influencing those scores besides just the starting point.
Okay.
But yes, that is a good point.
Just having that universe of alternative schools, you show that your intention is to start with a level playing field, right?
Yeah. The next modification that was made is to graduation rate. Instead of applying those phased-in set of targets based on those 2020 governor's graduation rate targets, the alternative framework looks at the points as calculated in the A through F alternative letter grade calculation. And do you Hannah, do you want to say anything more about this? I know that this was also something, an adjustment that was made after discussion in the focus groups.
I forgot to bring my slide in with me, but this is the one where the alternative school graduation rate is based on a 5-year grad rate, whereas what we presented to you for the traditional model would be the governor's 4-year grad rate. The 5-year grad rate is based on, and there are a bunch of alternative schools here who can help me or correct me, but there are three different indicators, three different conditions that any of which could be met gave them their additional points through the A through F letter grade process. So what we determined was that if you earned the points that the State Board of Ed had established, if you met the criteria that the State Board of Ed had established to earn the points through the A through F letter grade, that then that would be an indication that you met our criteria for graduation rate.
Another measure that was added to the alternative framework that is not present in the traditional framework is academic persistence. So this measures whether students are remaining enrolled in school across years. And so I said this again, because this is important to the alternative school context, was added to this framework.
So it's enrolled in school regardless of what school?
No, I mean, this is in the...
Actually, we discussed whether or not they needed to be enrolled in the same school or if they could be a different school. And because of the transitory nature of the students, the mobility of the students who are enrolled in the alternative schools, we felt like if, in fact, the student couldn't come back to that alternative school but went to another school, that they should get credit. But what we did want to make sure was is that it was the school's motivation that kept that student enrolled potentially. And so if that student found themselves enrolled in another school by October 1, then it counted. If that student enrolled in another school after October 1 in their school or another school after October 1, then the motivation that the school may have created may have been lost.
Is that easily attainable data?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can get it.
So those are the modifications made for the alternative academic framework. Should we take a moment and just make sure there aren't any other questions about, again, you have the full framework in the guidance document in the appendix at the end.
So Peter, back to your question about easily attainable, you wouldn't have it for the current year, you'd have to go back a year. So who left and who re-enrolled would be a prior year data point, not a current year point.
Are those just is that the dropout data? Is that what that data is? The reverse of the dropout data?
No, because it's not your, it's who. So you take a look at those students. It would be the school's dropout data and or attendance. It'd be their withdrawal data. Where did that student go, or how did they report that student? When you say, is it accessible? Yeah. Is it easy? I mean, to the extent that the department will release it and we can do the calculations and we have matches. I mean, if you think about all of the corrections that people make to their attendance data all the time, at some point you have to say, okay, we're calculating these based on the information that is available at this point. And if you find a student 3 weeks later, 5 months later, whatever, we can't do anything to make those adjustments. That would be too labor intensive.
Okay. Next, we're going to run through the analysis that we've conducted on these measures. And as we've been discussing, there were some measures that have been modified based on some trial run analysis. So we may not have new data, but we have the basis for those modifications are from the original trial run analysis. We conducted, there are actually two separate trial run analyses that were conducted. We conducted the first initial trial run was for a composite of 23 schools in the 2010-2011 charter school performance data. And then there were select measures that were actually run using the 2012 data, which was with the assistance of the association, that was for all charter schools in the state. So we have two sets of trial run analyses. Some are 2011, some are 2012. Important to note that most of the time for those 2012 measures, that additional analysis was to provide for some adjustments that we have made based on the 2011 analysis and trial run. So this slide provides for you a broad overview of the results of the trial run analyses. The I'm going to walk through this because it's crazy. It looks crazy, but it is. We'll walk through each of the measures and we'll also discuss what we're including here. We've provided summary information of where the percentages fall out in terms of exceeds, meets, does not meet, and falls far below. The group of schools analyzed, just remember to note that in 2011 there was a group of 23 schools that were analyzed, and in 2012 for these measures it was all the charter schools in the state. For the growth measures, we have analysis for both growth, overall growth, as well as the lowest 25% in 2011-2012. So we have the more recent data for those analyses. For proficiency status, we have 2011 data. And then we'll note, we're going to talk specifically about the similar schools numbers that are in there. Those are, there's a different proposed methodology based on some of the trial run results. And then the analysis for the subgroups was, we didn't include the data in here because the at the time of the trial analysis, we only had access to ELL subgroups. We didn't have access to other subgroups, so we don't include those measures in here for that overall scoring. The state rating or state rating system is the more current 2012 data, as is the 2012 graduation rates. The SAT-ACT measure, that data was not available, and as we've discussed that in the weighting scheme, and as we've already kind of glanced over and discussed a little bit, is due to some data availability, as well as the same, the credit accumulation measure was not analyzed because that measure was conceptualized post-trial run analysis. And then we have some information on the new measures that are for the alternative framework and how some of those fell out.
If I can just point out one thing, this is why I'm worried about the state rating thing. You know, when you see, like, these are the components that make up the state rating right there, roughly. And it's a lot lower, what we're giving is a lot lower in terms of exceeds than what the state label ends up churning out as exceeds. Which I'm okay with. I'm okay with us being more rigorous.
I see, yep.
It just makes me, that's why it makes me nervous to throw in the less rigorous thing into our own.
Right. So a couple of things that were, just to remind everyone, a couple of things that were discussed with that issue. One was a potential of revising that measure from the grade cut points. This is currently with
the numbers,
grades,
yeah.
To the numbers, yeah. To give a more nuanced cut.
Uh-huh.
Another thing to consider is the weighting of that measure, and that is currently weighted fairly low. So in terms of an overall scoring, it's not going to have a heavy weight. However, from a contextual perspective, it is important to recognize that this is something that is used in the conversation around school accountability in the state. And that is something that is a realistic thing to consider, that is important for you all as a board to recognize or to consider as well and determine how to work through. So just to kind of I'm trying to summarize the conversation that we had earlier on that. I'm going to walk through each of these, and Lirio, you and I can kind of walk through the percentages specifically. Starting with the growth measures for the math and reading, we cut out those separately so that you can see a little bit how the performance falls out a little bit separately. This is overall growth. And recall, this is the school's the SGP, and meeting the standard is you're meeting it at 50. The median is 50 or higher for your school. for the lowest 25 is the same cut point, but we're focusing in, magnifying glass, focusing in on the lowest 25% of the students in that school.
I think one thing that I would just point out is that it is unlikely, especially for the exceeds, you're looking at this as composite, all schools together. It's very likely that, especially when looking at the growth measures and the proficiency next to them, very often it's not going to necessarily be the same schools that are exceeding in proficiency versus growth. So it would have been nice if we could have given you every charter school in the state and you had seen everything across, but that would have been, it was a little beyond what we could do here. So just realize that there's interplay on, these are not the same schools that are going to be, you know, hitting exceeds or falls far below on each of these measures. As Katie, what we have here for the, Katie had talked about the growth measures, for the proficiency, both the that 2.A and then the one next to it, these were run on the a subset of 10-11 of schools using 10-11 data. And again, this is a comparison of that proficiency is a comparison of the school's overall proficiency to the state average adjusted to their grade level enrollment.
So the next one that has an asterisk by it, 2B, similar schools. Recall that in our conversation as we presented this, we've discussed 2B is actually a composite measure. So we actually have changed the methodology for this measure based on the trial run analysis. Essentially what we found is that with matching schools, charter schools to similar schools statewide, that there were some charter schools that didn't get similar school matches. Because of that, we chose to revise the methodological approach. We actually took adopted a composite score, which we had discussed, or a composite methodology that we had discussed a little bit briefly. That composite methodology is actually more statistically accurate than this similar schools analysis. So it will actually be able to more accurately match the school's performance to those students demographically made statewide. So it provides for you a more accurate, similar approach. But these scores here, we just wanted to provide you guys with some context of where we kind of started with this evolution of this measure in particular. And then these scores that are included here are for those similar schools in 2011. Of those 23 schools, these are the similar schools percentages. There were some schools that were in that chunk of 23 schools that did not have matches. So this does not incorporate all 23 of those schools in that in those scores.
And that composite's made up of students for both districts and charters?
Yeah. And the only adjustment that would be made would be for, in considering an alternative school, it would be, you know, students in alternative schools or students in small schools. That adjustment would be made for small schools. And again, as Katie mentioned, taking a composite using student level data will account for or will avoid some of the variability. If you actually choose, for example, four similar schools for a school, you know, there can be year-to-year variability, there can be other sort of outlier issues that come into that comparison to similar schools that by using statewide student level data are avoided.
And as mentioned, we didn't have data available for the subgroup analysis. So we don't have analysis from the trial run from either 2011 or 2012 for those. The cut points that are established for the subgroup scores that you have, or the subgroup cut points that you have in the framework, are those that are part of the generic model of performance expectation for those subgroups. And what we essentially want to be able to do is call out the outliers on either end, again, being consistent with how we're valuing that exceed standard and that falls far below standard. So we've we develop those cut points based on those expectations, as well as the cut point, the center cut point being as well as or better than the average.
The graduation rate here, we should note that, as we mentioned, we're proposing, or we've given in the framework document, a set of phased-in targets. So this, you see there's a large percentage of charter schools who have met the exceeds category. This is based not on the 2020 target of 93%, but on a first, you know, beginning phased-in. So that's so that is actually pegged to state average. Graduation rate. Then if you look to see the light blue at the right are the measures that would be added to the alternative framework. And the measure for which we have some results is that 1B, which is performance increases. So for alternative schools, this 1B would replace the growth of the lowest quartile that you see to the left of the table. Yeah, 1B there. Are there any questions about these?
Now we're going to talk about the weights, and then we'll have an opportunity to kind of think about all of this all together. So now, with weighting the framework, now that we have a bunch of measures that we've discussed, you've got four indicators, four buckets of different ways of looking at student performance within a school, and now we're talking about how do we want to value that. These weights are suggestions that we have that are good starting points for discussion and are certainly based on some of the considerations from the trial and run analysis, the accuracy of the method that's used, as well as the context, the consideration of the state grading system, for instance, is something that we've included. The guidance document that you have in front of you has a weighting scheme for all three types of schools. Has the traditional charter schools as well as the alternative charter schools for middle school and high school, elementary, middle, and high school, as well as small schools weighting scheme. For the purposes of discussion for us right now, we've just included here the weighting scheme for the elementary, middle, and high school for traditional charter schools. But we will certainly reference that weighting scheme and in terms of public comment and when we get into the conversations about each individual framework. I think it is useful to have this as part of the context around the discussion so that you have are able to have a conversation of how you want to value each of these measures. So again, this is the group of measures for the traditional charter school. We've got two growth measures, the school-wide median SGP and then the lowest 25%. And you'll see the weighting scheme that we have allocated for that. For proficiency, that is the statewide proficiency and with suggested weighting scheme of 15% and 20% for high school. The numbers end up being different, again, because we've got high school ratings to consider, so we have to adjust the ratings between elementary, middle, and high school. So just as a note of why that's, why you might see some things that are different. The comparative proficiency, we provide in terms of this the composite score for elementary, middle, and high school, a 15% weight with the same balance between elementary, middle, and high school. And then individual subgroups, the elementary and middle school gets a slightly higher weight where the high school has a 10% weight. Statewide accountability, the grading system is weighted slightly higher for the high school than it is for the elementary and middle. And then the graduation rate obviously doesn't apply for elementary and middle, but does for 10% for the high schools. And then notice, as we had kind of mentioned earlier and discussed, the ACT-SAT performance and participation measure, which which we're including all together as one here, just for simplicity. We don't have a weighting scheme for the SAT, ACT, or the credit accumulation. Those measures are under development. It's a way kind of to look at this, and so because of that, we're currently suggesting a weighting scheme that does not include those, doesn't incorporate those measures in an overall score. This is a starting point for discussion, certainly.
I don't know if I saw in the document. So what's your, you apply the weights, what's your final score? Like a, you know, meets or exceeds or?
Right, yep. We'll go right to the.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, I don't want to segue. People have questions on the other. It is, if you go back to the prior chart, because today we look at growth and the proficiency, right? And we really do it 50-50, if you think about it, right? 50-50. In this case, if I go to elementary, I'm 50-45, right? And I put 5% of that down to the state accountability. If I go to high school, now I, you know, drop it to 30, and I put more, you know, emphasis on that mean score as opposed to growth. What were the thoughts behind those allocations? Because if I go back to elementary, we're essentially doing 50-50 today. We have the chart, we can see where you're at, and we, you know, it seems like we give equal weight to both.
Right. So again, just to reiterate, these are starting points and certainly
correct.
Need to reflect. Because growth is based on only the one assessment in high school, many times you will see slightly lower weight given to growth. And I think that if you do wind up being able to include any of the other post-secondary, I would certainly put, you know, obviously weight would be assigned to them, and you would essentially practically probably have less weight on the status or proficiency measure so that they wind up being a little bit more equal.
It's just me, it makes me, so speaking as a charter operator, this makes me really nervous. I mean, because I don't know, I mean, now, at least now with the state grade, which I believe is bankrupt in a number of ways, but at least now with the state grade, I know the 50%, like I can look it up at some point in the spring. Here now, I mean, there's so many things in here that I can't control or I don't know how to measure in the middle of the year very well. It's just, so like I would look at that and I literally would have no idea how any of my schools would have done on this. And it's not like I should make decisions about weighting based upon how, you know, 10 schools or my school or so many schools are doing. It just, we the raw proficiency, that 2A that we all kind of know and can
right.
can judge early on and give benchmark tests to judge early, that's now just such a small percentage of the overall thing that we'll be judged on, that it's just scary. I'm not saying it's bad.
It isn't though. Is it not though about 45% if you add all three together?
Right.
Well, I don't know about the statewide composite. I don't know how, that sounds like magic. Like, I don't know what's, and not to say that, I can't do it myself as an operator.
Well,
it's also hard for me to do the individual
right.
subgroups myself
right.
as an operator. Right. Although you're right, I probably can pull that data.
I also think that it probably, in practice, it would be that once these are established, the comparison, so for example, for proficiency, the state average that you're being compared to is likely to remain pretty
right.
consistent year to year. So after the first, you would essentially have a preliminary set of
yeah.
targets against which you were measuring
yeah.
yourself. And I think, if anything, it would require an additional look at how are subgroups in my school doing. But aside from that, I don't know that you would need to have any different metrics that you were keeping an eye on. You know, that a school would be, they would be looking at the growth and the proficiency. I think that the main addition is that focus on, or additional look at the subgroup proficiency.
Would all schools be affected by the subgroup?
No, so they would have to have an eligible subgroup of at least 10
So if you're not affected by a subgroup, how does that change your
Well, you all would need to, if we move to this next week, we've just suggested an approach for rolling up. The easy answer to there, I think the easiest thing to do is it would be taken out and everything else would be prorated, equally adjusted.
Or I would say you throw it to the other proficiency, right?
Exactly, within proficiency or within growth. So, you know, the easiest approach to take in terms of creating an overall then rating is to assign, you know, a score to each of the rating categories, and then based on your weighting, do a weighted average. The next important piece then is to establish your ranges for the final composite or average score for the school's overall rating. So again, if you used, you know, 25, 50, 75, and 100, you would have, based on the weights that you applied and then took an average of all the measures, you'll have a final score. And then this would be a proposed set of ranges, but that's certainly something to look at carefully in terms of a final adoption.
Does the state currently do the higher, I don't think they do, but I want to make sure, do they do the higher weight on growth at the elementary school level versus the high school level?
Well, they combine the score of the two, and I think practically speaking, Anna, you may know more, because there are a few more measures added into the high school, I think it essentially weights the growth a little bit.
If you go back to the last slide,
yeah.
So growth is weighted much more from middle school, elementary school.
Right.
And that's 45. 50 to 30, isn't it?
Which is
45 if you add all three.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of like, yeah, weight. So we're weighting growth percentiles 50%,
right,
for middle school, elementary school, and 30% for high school.
And
that's pretty common across the country to pay more attention to growth at the elementary school, middle school, and less attention at the high school.
For two reasons. One is the growth at that level is, you see it more, so it's more, you see higher growth at the elementary, middle school level. So it's easier to measure that accurately than it is at the high school level. Also, practically speaking, the test is administered more often at the middle school and elementary levels, and so your high school level growth is just tells you a little bit less about the school's performance. So from a weighting perspective, that's why it's adjusted in that way. Is that?
But plus, I mean, it stops right in grade what, 10?
Right. So yeah, that's. Any other questions about the weighting or the trial run or the?
Go back to the chart if you would. So go one after that, the color charts. I would assign number scores to the each category, right?
Right.
Okay. So if I use, let's use proficiency, right? So if I get a 50, that means 50 of my kids are higher. Is that the number I use for the weighting?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm trying to think of that as you pick your rolling up.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm okay at 50, I don't know how at all, I'd have to see the math, right?
Right.
If I'm okay at 50, but my cutoff's 63.
Mm-hmm.
But before I was okay at 50 because I was above the average.
I technically know the global standard is you get 50 points.
Okay.
So remember, you go way back to the measure itself,
yep,
and you say, oh,
yep,
did I meet the standard? Yes, okay, you get 75 points.
Okay.
And then you take those 75 points and you weight them with that percentage that we had in that other table. And then once you have a total number of points for the total number possible,
right,
that's when you roll, you know, that's how you roll it up and you say, okay, if you had this many points, that's how you
move. Right, understood. Yeah, so the 63 makes more sense. If I was meets across the board, I'm a 75.
Right, so it's banding, so it considers, oh, sometimes you might exceed the standard,
right,
sometimes you might not,
right,
not meet the standard, but overall, you're in that band of 63 to 88, 75 is right above.
And I think an important thing is that the framework is composed of a range of measures that are taking detailed look at very different aspects of performance. And so it would require consistently high performance across them all to be in the exceeds, or and consistently meeting the standard to be in the meets. Likewise, it would require consistent very poor performance to be in the falls far below. So I think sometimes there can be a concern at looking at targets for an individual measure, saying, oh, do we want to have consequences for a school because of not meeting this target? And it's important to realize that at this point, you're considering all of them across the framework.
Right.
So this is an attempt to really take a view of considering everything that has been evaluated, how would we assess the school?
Right.
And this is your opportunity to set those benchmarks.
Right. One thing, as a school, I could go, well, you know, I was 1 point away from exceeds, and here I get a 75. But I may be in other categories where I was 1 point away from below and ended up with a 75 anyways, right?
Exactly. And what we have seen in conducting trial runs is that you are generally seeing consistent performance across. And there might be times where a school has, one where they're not doing well, but if that's the only, area of concern across the whole framework, that certainly would never put them into a category where they were subject to consequences.
If we go back to the table, does that add up? Do they add up to 100 right now?
They should.
So when we add these other things in, how would you
take away
evenly, or is there a particular area that you would diminish more than another?
Yes. So theoretically, yes, you would end up needing to adjust the other measures based on the inclusion of those additional measures, and that would only apply to the high school.
Right.
Right,
they don't actually add to 100 right now, and they should.
So
there's 5% missing that needs to be put in. After the summer, there's quite a bit of conversation and adjustments and considerations to this, so 5% needs to go back in.
But it's more, you...
Yeah, 5%.
That's why I was asking. It's not that you would... You're not necessarily saying the bottom two would be weighted 5% collectively. That was the
answer. No.
Okay.
No. Right. No. Those were added and there were adjustments, and yes, there's a mistake right there in that table.
So where would you put the 5%?
That's for you to figure out.
That is.
I would put it in the individual subgroup for high school.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want a real, so it's on the spot.
Okay.
Any other questions from board members or discussion? So you want to do a call to the public on this?
Yeah.
And this is, so what we haven't discussed is the small school.
Right.
Is that right? But we have discussed traditional and the alternative. So this is any comments on traditional and alternative?
I think we should take the any comments on the small schools as well. And really the differences between the small school and the traditional is accumulating that N for your number of students. And in the A through F letter grade, they use 3 years of pooled data. And we proposed that initially with the alternative framework when we were discussing it. And the information that was shared was that when you're using the pooled data, you're going back, in essence, an additional, you're looking at your prior year plus 2 years before that. And when that happens, if you have been making improvements in your performance, you're penalized for that past poor performance when you're pooling those 3 years. So the alternative schools had said that they were willing to take just the current year data and not use the 3 years of pooled data for when looking at the proficiency, because you're looking at just your 10th grade students. And so if you weighted it less, so it becomes into a weighting issue and things. But for the small schools, it gets really challenging when you don't use 3 years of data. There's a question about the impact of outliers when your N becomes really small. And if we use that N of 10 for the subgroups in each of those different categories, there could be the potential that you wouldn't have data in a number of areas, and I think I heard you say that you would roll that weight up to the other areas if you didn't have a percent or a number for a certain area or score for a certain area. And so are you then relying on a single basis, or you know, what would you do then? So again, we did have a meeting with the small schools too, but we had just a very limited amount of opportunity to discuss with them. So perhaps if they're here today, it would be appropriate to have them share their comments and their ideas on that as well.
And just to add, the traditional model that we walked through would be the same for the small schools. The changes are in the methodology as well as the weighting, and the methodology is the end of this discussion.
Okay. Well, I've got three calls to the public, and if after hearing that you've got something else that you want to do, maybe you can just ask, I don't see Bianca, but you can certainly fill out a form, that way we can keep a record of you speaking. So just grab a form and then submit it to her, and she'll bring it up to me. But we have three. First, we have Amy Schlesman from Rose Academies.
Hey, Peter, would you say that if you would like to restrict their time just so that we can be aware?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Troy, we just have an hour, and I know some of us have to leave at 12, so if you could restrict your comments to 3 minutes.
Oh, you know what? I did tell Amy that she wouldn't have to do that when
Doesn't
we were
apply
talking
to Amy.
About other stuff. Well, and they presented a letter too, which you have been provided
okay.
as well.
It's
so yeah, I told her she didn't have to pass her torch to somebody else to finish her conversation. So I don't know, Amy, can you tell us how long you're going to?
Right, and actually, maybe I'll try. Yeah, okay. Maybe I can do 3 minutes because we did do a written statement.
Okay, great.
And do you all have copies of the written statement?
I think so.
Because I can hand them out to you.
It's just right here, right?
Yes.
We saw it. Both pages.
Two pages.
Okay. Yes. So, as you see from the statement, we support the draft framework. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about who the consortium is, because that may be the allowance for the extra minute or so. But we are a grassroots membership association. We include accommodation, district, and charter schools. So as you'll see on the committee at the end, we even have a district and accommodation school said to us, you guys helped us get the A through F alternative through the state. So we're going to be with you when you come before the charter school board. And we currently represent around 60 schools. It's a rough estimate because people are always joining or contacting us. And approximately 12 EESPs, the education service providers. So I want to emphasize that because we are speaking with a unified voice. We were greatly encouraged that the ASBCS staff asked us to collaborate on development of the framework. And you have seen the presentation about the indicators and the measures. So in general, we agree with the indicators and measures. We had two things that we wanted to talk about with qualifications to them. The one is the state accountability, and you've already had some discussion about that. But we thought that maybe a three-year look at the state accountability would be more helpful than just 1 year, because, and you've already mentioned, you might have the anomaly, I can't pronounce that, it's written. I'm a little bit nervous. A school getting a certain grade 1 year. So if you look at 3 years rather than just the one, you might get, rather than just that snapshot, you might get a better look of how the state grade is over time for that school. I know that that's complicated right now because the alternative schools just moved from legacy to A through F, but we're happy to work with the state board if you want to try and figure out what else.
So Amy, would you recommend that then you don't get that area weighted for until there are 3 years, or how would you propose doing that?
Well, maybe use a legacy label if the school was performing, because that was the highest one available. Actually, there were only two for alternative schools before the A through F, and they were performing and underperforming. So go ahead and make performing meets the standard and underperforming doesn't meet it, and average that over 3 years. It's just a suggestion, and we'll see how far we get today. Then also the graduation rate. In general, we're okay with that, but many of the schools in the consortium, and Deanna will tell you, what was it going to be, a 90-minute meeting when we did that focus group? On Thursday, turned into 7 hours. The next day, the consortium looked at the model, and then the Alternative School Accountability Committee had time to sleep on the different measurements and metrics, and there was still enough conversation and concern expressed about the alternative schools not capture, that the five-year graduation rate does not capture the alternative schools that serve what we call super seniors, sixth, seventh, and even eighth year graduates. And we didn't have time, I meant to bring my phone up so I could read Karen Callahan's comment. Karen Callahan is from Genesis Academy. She had a conflict today, but she is on the committee. And as she said, 95% of her enrollees are behind cohort when they enroll. So, and she made the comment, we didn't have time in 2 or 3 days to suggest a standard option, because that's what we wrote about here. Would the board consider a standard option? Because what's going to happen is there are going to be alternative schools that don't meet the five-year graduation rate because they have so many super seniors. So the thing that I heard that both Deanna say and then today, that if a school does not meet a certain indicator, that indicator won't be calculated in the what is overall rating of the school, and the overall rating will be adjusted accordingly. But people were still nervous about it because alternative schools have been beat up so long about not graduating within 4 and 5 years, and even the state can't capture, and I don't understand completely why, beyond 5 years right now. If you go to our website, and thank you IntelliSchools for setting it up, and Learning Matters for supporting it, we have a PowerPoint that our January 2010 meeting, the Arizona Charter School Association presented some data about who the alternative schools do graduate. And you can see from that data that only 50% of the graduates are in cohort. So that means the other 50% are either early grads, which occasionally happens, or then the super seniors, 5, 6, 7, and 8 years. So again, that's just a question that we put, would it make the framework stronger if a standard option were available? And then also in the weighting suggestions, we are the second, it's page 18 of your document. We are the second of the slash in the suggested weightings. We had time, and this is our piece that were slightly different than what we talked to Deanna about. After this whole discussion of graduation rate, we decided to then suggest 15% for the five-year grad rate and add the 5% right now to academic persistence. And the reason we're keeping 35% within this college and career readiness indicator is in that keeps the weightings consistent with a framework that the Arizona Alternative Education Consortium recommended, or actually put together back in January of 11. So we've been anticipating this all along. If you have time to go to the website, look at the framework, that we have suggested, but a total of 30 for growth, 30 for status. Actually, we went up on status because our original framework only had 10%, but with alternative schools being compared with alternative schools, we felt all right with the 20% proficient. We are very encouraged with the comparison subgroups because we do have alternative schools that have high ELL subpopulations, and we are very encouraged that that is one of the categories. We also have alternative schools, and we couldn't see impact data, but the state reported in a presentation of the State Board for Charter Schools, the State Board of Education, back in May, that the mean for alternative schools for special, you said students with disabilities or special needs, for special needs students is 16%. I know from looking at my own school's data, we sometimes have a year when we have 25% special needs. And that's only one school. And the other consortium schools are here, they're kind of nodding their heads. It's like, yeah, you know, we have those years when we have very high SPED population. We checked on our schools and saw that not every alternative school had even a 16%. So that is an encouraging subgroup analysis. So I heard some discussion of that. The low percentage weighting that we have for the state grade is an answer to, I don't know whether it's going to be Chairman Bazanson or Vice President.
Either one sounds good. I like them both.
You like them both, okay. And so that addresses that. And the whole concerns about the state ratings. And the final, well, maybe the final thing I'll say is that we do need to clarify academic persistence. Because, and I'll let Patty talk about that. But we're okay, from my understanding of it, we're okay with it. I hadn't seen the cut scores before this presentation today, so I was not quite sure about that, but we'll have to look at it. So anyway, thank you very, and so I did go over time, so thank you very much for the time. You'll see that we hope, we didn't see impact data or trial runs before this morning. So obviously what you want with a framework is to be able to manage your portfolio. So what you do not want is to have the alternative schools, all of them, come back to you and say, well, we didn't make it, but our data shows this. So I hope that we're getting to a point, and that's why I couldn't see that slide of the trial run data very well, but you will be able to say, yes, at least if we do this framework, 50% of the alternative charter schools are not going to need to submit all this extra paperwork. Because I go back to that slide at the very beginning about autonomy. That's the purpose of this whole thing, is to get to autonomy. And I also heard flexibility within the framework. And you will hear from a couple of alternative charter schools today that they're going to say, you know what, our population is so different that we're not sure that we're even going to be able to use your framework. But as long as you will look at our data, which uses national reference exams and various things, I'll let other people talk about that more, we will still be considered if we are outliers even with this framework. So I think that, I did want to publicly recognize the people that have worked so hard on this committee. Jerry Bauman was here today. You'll hear from her. She's from the SciTech Charter Schools. I mentioned Karen Callahan is on the committee from Genesis Academy. Ron Grimsley and Dinky Jones from the Ombudsman Charter Schools Vicki McFarland from the Institute and Learning Matters, Patty Shaw from the public schools, and we'll be hearing from her, and then Jim Taylor from the Yavapai County Schools. And again, I am so proud that we are a consortium of all alternative schools, not just the charter schools. So thank you very much.
You know, it does beg a question. We do have a split grade on an alternative charter schools. What's the split grade about?
So the focus group couldn't agree on what they wanted, and so the splits are the two different opinions on what your weight should be.
Gotcha. Thank you, Amy. I think you tried to pass the baton to Patty, so I'll go ahead and allow that to happen. Let Patty tell us what.
Good morning, committee. How are you? I'm Patty Shaw, and I am founder of Intalba School, one of the first charter schools to open back in 1995. We have four locations and about 450 students. I'm probably one of the handful of charter operators that intentionally went for a population of at-risk and special ed kids. I've been working with the consortium for a couple of years now, and I've been toying with the idea of how can I get more information on my students. My performance management plan, which has been done for all of our entities, is a living, breathing document of academic data that changes from year to year. But I wanted some real-time information. So I concocted this questionnaire that I wanted totally separated from the student and just information for me to look at. And we have enrolled 425 students since July 1. 24% passed the eighth grade AIMS. Of those who had already taken the high school AIMS, 15% passed writing, 14% passed reading, and 9.9% passed the math. 87% are dropouts. And their reasons were either they dropped out intentionally, they had excessive absences and the prior school got rid of them, or they were suspended or expelled. Another 87% of the students reported needing a fresh start, that they had gotten involved with a population of kids that they defined as a bad crowd, or they had developed a negative reputation and did not feel accepted at their prior school. Another 71% felt dissatisfied with their prior school. They felt bullied. They did not like the prior school. They couldn't pay attention in class, and they felt like they were not learning. 34% came in behind in credits. 19% came in with failing grades. Of all of the students that we've interviewed, 16% had gone to more than four schools, with as many as nine schools in their academic history. Now, where I came from, which is back east, we went to an elementary school, a junior high school, and a high school. So it would be normal for me to go to three schools. Most of the districts here are elementary, middle school, and high school. So I think four schools was my cutoff because that's double what a typical kid would do here, and speaks to the mobility. And I do want to speak to the mobility issue and get some clarification. Right now is about the time we start seeing our high school kids making rounds. And by that, I mean they drop out of high school, they'll go to another school a few miles away, they'll stay there for a couple of months, they'll drop out of that school, they'll go to E-Institute, or they'll go to Career Success, or they'll go to SciTech, and they may see five schools in 1 year. They are so educationally disenfranchised. And then a year or two later, they'll come back into my school. I just want you to keep in mind that these are the percentages we're dealing with. These are not a normal kid who has the innate potential to go to college. These are really struggling individuals who often go to college. Thank you. I was done. I have The longevity data is from the performance management plans, which is on file with staff. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry from Arizona School for...
Academics and Technology.
Yes, ma'am.
AKA Cyrotech. Thank you very much, and I will keep to 3 minutes. I have just, we're the outlier school. Cyrotech is a public charter high school with campuses nationwide. We partner largely with Job Corps centers and provide the high school program at Job Corps. And here in Arizona, we have two schools, one in Tucson, one in Phoenix at the Job Corps Center. Nationwide, we have 15 Job Corps partnerships with approximately 4,000 students. Currently, this year, we have about 280 students enrolled over our two campuses, across our two campuses. Over the last, since 1998, we have graduated over 11,000 students. Our mission is to provide a premier high school dropout recovery program that engages students through relationship-focused, high technology, and rigorous learning experiences, and re-engages school, resulting in real learning for real life, and that is our mission. We are also fully accredited with AdvancedEd across our entire corporation, all of our sites and our central office as well. So we pride ourselves in having a quality program for these students. We hold high expectations. But I wanted to talk to you about this. What does our population look like? And we are the outlier. The state found out that we are the outlier. Our rating was a no rating because our students are so old that they don't have enough data to rate us. Our cohorts often academics will run two or three students out of our 300 to sometimes 400 students that we have. So we don't make the end number. I wanted to give you just a little overview. They say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Our performance cohort for 2012 for graduation purposes was a 7. Okay, so only 7 of our students actually were recognized, were within the 5-year graduation cohort, using the 5-year cohort. These are the actual ages of the students who graduated. If you look at your bar graph, some of you have a color of blue, some of them are just a regular bar graph. But I wanted you to look at, we take no students under 16. Last year we had approximately 9 students, or we did have 9 students that were 17 years of age. So those numbers on top are the raw number, raw data. 43% of our students were 18 or under. 57% of our students were 18 years of age, which already put them out of 57% of our students are out of any kind of cohort that's recognized by the state. So I just want you to think about that, because I do have a proposal, a real short proposal at the end about what you might consider, okay? And you might say, well, where are the rest, because this is 81 students, where are the rest of your students going? So this is the report for the graduation report for 2011, which is the latest data we have for graduation. And I just wanted you to see, and this somewhat speaks to academic persistence as well. Of our students who ended the year as Cyotech students, we had 17% who graduated. We had 15% who went to GED, and that speaks to the demographic age of our students and also their life situations. They tend to get to a point where they're aging out or they have other things in their life that requires them, they want to get something tangible that will allow them to go on to further training and further education. We have one student who had no AIM scores but completed our program. We have a few students that were out on medical. We have about 25% that were either dropout or unknown, and that's an area of concern for us. And we have 43% of our students, and I think this is significant, continued with us from 2011 to 2012. So even if they were out of age, they did continue. One size does not fit all when evaluating schools as diverse as an alternative school. And I would ask that you please consider allowing us an option to provide ancillary data to support our results, somewhat like I just presented to you. Who were these students? Where did they go? What did they achieve? We use a secondary assessment, the STAR assessment, that's given four times a year to our students so that we can track their growth. And we do have yearly goals for growth for our students. And generally, it's at least 2-year achievement for each year of, you know, years and years. And we frequently get more than that. So this year's enrollment, right now we have, I said, about 280 students. 50% of those are 18 and under. 50% of those are 19 to 21. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. And we have one more, and I actually can't read the name from the Yoni group.
That's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's my handwriting, I apologize.
Your notes are on the back of this, too.
Yes, we know, don't hold them.
Do you want them?
Yes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mary Berg. I'm from the Leona Group, and I'm representing 15 alternative schools in the state of Arizona. First of all, I do want to acknowledge that I truly appreciate reaching out on the board when meeting before and looking at possibilities. The time that was dedicated was really appreciated, and the thought that we had a voice out there. I'm going to stand up here and say I support the framework that we turned in. I do believe the 5-year grad rate is the way to go in these schools. At some point, we just have to say, this is where we're going to cut it. I agree, we have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year grad if you want to keep going, but at some point, I feel 5-year grad rate is a fair measure across the state. The growth, I would request that we stick with the submitted 1-year growth. That's what we had talked about. I believe that, again, our schools change. We want to make sure that we're not resting on past laurels, but every single year we're putting forth effort. We're moving our students forward. And we do try different programs, and we're constantly doing that. And the 3-year growth rate, should we have a program that didn't work or at the year, I would hate to see that holding our smarter schools back. When we met about this, same question I had with the great questions, the A, B, C, and D, if the state was clearly saying statewide that C is an acceptable grade, it's an average grade. Did hit me that all schools are A's, B's, acceptable, C's not acceptable. The other point that I hope that you'll look at with impact data is when you look at the percentage of schools that receive A's and B's for alternative schools versus traditional schools. About 30% of the alternative schools receive A's and B's, and you're going to know there's a difference when you get to traditional schools. The majority of them receive A's and B's, so I think that might just be an interesting point to look at. Same thing that I love seeing the impact data. I'd love to see that carried one step further now. As far as, great, you've got the impact data. What happens to the schools in the end? So we see the percentage that are meets, the percentage that exceeds. But when you take that final step and you get the point breakdowns, how many of our schools at that point are at the exceeds? How many points are at the meets? How many points are the does not meet? Just to see kind of where we're falling. I would also love to see that impact data, and I don't know if it's a possibility to take a look at a school that had an A, a B, a C, or a D within the state grading system to see how they finished off this whole model, to see what happened to them. subgroups, alternative schools are very different schools, I'm going to acknowledge that. Absolutely, we're different in anything ourselves, so subgroups may not even apply to us. I mean, we can sit and listen to all the alternative schools, come up here, explain how different they are. We are all very different, but in our difference, I believe we find us more alike than different. And, I hate to tell you folks, but I think I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. That's the call to the public that we have.
Do we have no small schools that want to